Hey guys, welcome back to the Delta Flyers. The Delta Flyers is a weekly podcast whereby my co-host Robbie Duncan McNeil and myself will be rewatching, recapping, discussing Voyager episodes from start to finish. And for those who are our Patreon supporters, we will be providing additional content and material that our normal podcast will not include. So how's it going, Robbie?
It's good. It's going great. It's a beautiful day today. But I'm excited to sit down on the couch with a snack and a nice cold beverage and watch this next episode, Phage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phage is going to be a good one. Yes, it is. I'm excited to watch it for sure.
Yeah, things are good. I'm really starting to find a groove with this podcast and watching these episodes. And like I said before, every one of them is just bringing back so many memories. Like when we were talking to Dan Curry, we had a great conversation with Dan Curry, which you know, some of the fans can find that those extra interviews and episodes on Patreon as well. But Dan Curry mentioning like some of those St. Patty's Day lunches that Cape Mulgrew used to celebrate and bring in food and things like that. And I totally forgot about all that stuff. So this has
been. She did that every year. Every year.
She did it every year. And I totally forgot that that was a tradition. And so, yeah, this podcast is really bringing back, you know, that's just one of many memories that are coming back and details of those years that are coming back. So really excited to be living the journey with you.
Yeah, man. What's your cap say? I'm just curious. I can't read it from
my
here.
Cap says Ocean Village in Tofino, British Columbia. It's Rebecca and I went out there. So Tofino is on the western coast of Vancouver Island, and it's known for like storm watching, and it's the big surf spot in Canada. It's kind of like the Big Sur of Canada. Great little town, Tofino, with great restaurants and, you know, like 5-star Michelin restaurants and organic food and surfers. And it's super cool, Tofino. Yeah, that's Ocean Village is where we stayed. Right on the little cabins right on the water. You build bonfires out on the beach. It's awesome.
Nice. So those of you who are our Patreon supporters, we're going to start our segment, What Do We Remember? And for everybody else, we'll be right back with our recap after we watch the episode.
We just watched the episode Phage. Here's what I learned. I'm going to jump in.
I learned. You go.
The doctor has one of the most perfectly conceived characters. I think that I realized it watching this episode because for Star Trek, he's the classic kind of, point of view character, I guess, for a sci-fi show, for a Star Trek show. The Doctor is a classic point of view character because he's a non-human character who has very human yearnings and experiences and can't quite understand it. And I just thought that's one thing I definitely recognized in this episode, having, you know, watched now the pilot in a couple episodes. It's so clear right out of the gate that this character is going to be a very critical sort of point of view character for our show. This episode just shot him miles ahead, in my opinion. The scenes with Kes, the scenes with Tom Paris, the scenes with the captain, the scenes with all those scenes in the med bay, they just added up to a complete story. There was comedy, there was pathos and drama, there was, you know, heartfelt moments. I thought that part of our story in the medical bay really landed as a full meal, like a complete experience. That's one thing that I wouldn't have guessed if you had said to me, oh, remember Phage? I thought about the Vidians. I thought about the organ harvesting. Yes, that happened. But to me, the thing that was really important was establishing the Doctor as a real important character for our show. So that's what I learned.
Well, you know what's interesting is like they never really explain why he has these yearnings or these feelings.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because let's face it, he's a program. So he really shouldn't have had those feelings or yearnings, and none of that should have been there. So I find it kind of, I'm left in the dark a little bit. I don't understand what's happening other than the fact that, you know, Bob Picardo, the actor, started, you know, adding his own little flair to it. And then the writers sort of just picked up on that cue and they ran with it. Literally.
I don't know that it was Bob. Like, I want to say, sure, like actors have the ability to sway writers one way or the other, but I think it's much more subtle and much more delayed for the writers to react that way. I think this was just in the concept of the character.
Okay.
I really do. I think it was a very well-conceived, just like when Seven of Nine joins our show later on, you again have like this second wave of a perfect sci-fi character.
Okay.
That comes out of technology or an alien experience and starts having human experiences and has to learn it. And I noticed in the very first scene when they were talking about a rogue, they were on the walk and talk.
A rogue planetoid is what they referred to.
And I was like, it was just very interesting. You know, it's just a subtle little detail, but it's like, oh, it's sort of a rogue. It's off on its own. It's, you know, Neelix won't know a lot about it. Like it already establishes this sort of mysterious little planetoid thing.
Well, that's first of all, just the terminology, that vocabulary, rogue planetoid is just, okay, planetoid, smaller than a major planet, I suppose, rogue, away from everything else. But they mentioned that Neelix knows of this as having a dilithium deposit. So it's like, okay, it's a little, if they mention that, then I kind of feel like, wait a minute, I feel like there's a bit of a hole in the script. It's sort of like, if he knew about this, then why didn't he originally, as an explorer, whatever he did, why didn't he go there? Maybe he heard from word of mouth that this was known as a rich dilithium deposit area.
Yeah.
I don't know. Then the next scene after the walk and talk, they go to the mess hall.
They're walking along, and I noticed Robert's hair looked like it was darker.
Is this the beginning?
In the very beginning, it looked a little darker. And then later on in the episode, it was that salt and pepper again. So I'm like, well, they wouldn't have done it only for one scene.
No.
I wonder if this is, I don't know. I hate to sound like the hair police, but I was kind of paying attention to it. And I was like, wait a minute, Roberts, did they change it yet? Or maybe they noticed that it looks a little darker in dark sets and more salt and pepper in the more lit sets. And maybe they wanted it to be more consistent. I don't know.
Yeah. That sounds more like it. It was a lighting issue. You probably saw it differently under different light. But it's cool that we now have the Chakotay hair watch. We're going to be watching and observing Chakotay's hair throughout the series to make sure
his hair is very important.
Very important.
I feel like my hairstyle's changed already in these first few episodes. Like sometimes it was really like, you know, pulled down tight. Other times it was like swoopy.
It was looser. Yeah.
Fonty and... And I should have just worn a baseball cap in the show.
Who they got to do that on Enterprise, thank you know, those bastards.
Oh yeah, they did.
How did you I always feel like Enterprise guys, I always say those bastards. They got to wear nice jumpsuit, modern day, you know, Air Force looking jumpsuits. They got baseball caps and then we had to deal with our hardcore Starfleet itchy, tight, hot uniforms.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Now in the mess hall, did you realize that the mess hall was originally the captain's private dining room?
I never. That was brand new. That totally shocked me. Yeah, I've got that down here. It was like Janeway's private dining room. And then when she first comes in, I loved that Neelix was cooking and he was like clapping at the fires. I was like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you clapping at the fire? He was waving it out. He was like telling it, like somehow communicating to the fire, like, get busy. Come on, get busy, fire. It was very funny.
I'll be honest, I did not notice that.
It was just random clapping at the fires, like, good job, good job. It's just, he does the most silly, funny, absurd things. Ethan makes me laugh all the time.
He does. We come on the bridge and you see Chakotay and Janeway and Neelix asked to be part of the away team. But the first thing you notice is this is the first time that Kim is sitting down. He's always been standing up.
Oh, interesting.
And so, you know, Megan actually said, oh, what are you doing? Sitting on the job now? And I said, there's been a chair there the entire time. Okay. I just, sometimes I'm standing, sometimes I'm sitting. And in this particular episode, it's the first time you see Kim sit. So there is a chair. Yeah.
They head down into the caves. And this is the first time I think we shot in those caves, at least to this extent. We were in the caves a lot in this episode, or you guys were. I wasn't, Paris wasn't down there, but he shot, they shot all over those caves, and the cave sets came from Next Generation. Mm-hmm. It had been the same cave sets that they had used on that show. So we ended up using these caves for 7 straight years, you know, the same sets.
Yeah, and these caves were located on stage 16. So these are a bit of a hike for us from where our trailers were positioned, which was right by stage 8 and 9. Stage 8 we used for the bridge. We also, the captain's ready room and the briefing room was stage 8. Stage 9 we utilized as all the corridors that you see, any walk and talks and Voyager corridors, those are on stage 9. Engineering was on stage 9. Sick bay was also located on stage 9. And then stage 16 were the alien caverns or landscapes, whatever. That was literally, I would say, probably like a block and a half away from where we were at. It wasn't really
a bit of
close.
A hike from our, if we went over there, we kind of stuck to that stage. We stayed, you know, stuck around. We sat in our chairs, or if the weather was nice, we might hang out outside between shots.
And do you remember the cats? There were these rogue cats, I guess, that there, I don't know how many, but dozens of them that lived underneath it, on that stage, underneath the stage, sound stage.
Well, that stage 16 had been in back in the old movie studio days, that had had a tank in it. So the floor was built over a giant swimming pool. There was actually a tank where they had done water scenes and things on that stage. So the cats sort of lived down in that, you know,
the old
base down
there. The old water, the old pool, basically, is what it was.
Old pool. Mm-hmm. It was a big stage too, huge stage. This was also an episode Rick Colby came back to direct, the first episode after he did the pilot. So that was, I think now we're starting to feel that first season a little bit of like a groove, you know. Mm-hmm. Rick Colby's coming back. We're familiar with him. All the cave stuff I thought was really cool. And then the next thing I noticed was in sick bay. I noticed the clamshell on that medical bed. This, I think, was the first time we actually used that clamshell coming up and down. And I have a memory of it not working when like the motor wasn't working. And then there was weird reflections when it came up. And I remember spending hours trying to deal with that bed for the first time, because we had never seen it actually move on cue, you know? You know, still working out the kinks of our sets. That's something I remember.
So I was just going to say, all these things that the viewers take for granted, like just the clamshell, like opening and closing. There's meetings about this, you know, and there's a lot of people sitting here trying to make sure that this thing looks proper, you know. Yeah. And speaking of people doing things, the doors, all the doors that we had that opened up, we had one guy, that's his job.
Will Toms,
his entire job was to open and close the doors. And he did a great job at it, but you know, he was a bit older. So there were days that maybe went a long day when he'd be a little tired, being a little bit older, that he might have maybe possibly dozed off a little bit. I just recall that there was a couple of times when the doors were supposed to open and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And we ran right into them. I just smacked right into them. So that happens every now and then. But before we continue with the sick bay scene, I just want to say that Neelix does not listen to Chakotay. Down on the planet in the caves, Chakotay keeps saying, you're getting too far. You need to come back. You got to come back. And he just disobeys orders over and over again. And so that just goes to show you, you know, if you're in a chain of command, you disobey orders, you become the red shirt. Bad things happen to you, right? You get your lungs removed. Now back to the sick bay. Robbie, I thought the doc was so harsh on you. Like, he literally was saying, like, Paris, a medic, you know, he makes fun of that. Later Kes talks about, you know, well, you do have Tom Paris to help you, and he says, like I said, no one helps me like that. Like, he's so harsh on Paris. How did you feel about that?
I was, you know, I felt like Tom didn't do anything wrong in the sick bay. Like, he was doing fine. But I think, again, that's part of like the very clear concept of the doctor, is that he's this non-human thinks he knows better than the humans, but then ends up sort of having these human experiences. I love the developing relationship, friendship with him and Kes. The beginnings of that in this episode I thought were great. When he slapped me, I loved that moment. I liked my expression. I was very happy with that. I thought, like, oh my God, I can't believe you just slapped me. But why I didn't try to slap him more than the one time my hand went through, I should have just grabbed him and just you know, hauled off and let him have it.
Your reaction was perfect. It really was. And it was one of those gem moments that you just don't expect him to do that. And he slaps the bejesus out of you. I love the line when Neelix says, your ceiling is hideous, because he's lying in that clamshell looking straight up. So that writing was awesome. It just reminds me, there was a salon in Vegas that they placed monitors on the ceiling where you're getting your hair shampooed. So when you're lying back, you got to watch music videos.
And funny.
And I keep thinking, was this because this salon owner was watching this Voyager episode and thought about this?
I thought this stuff Tom Paris had a couple of moments with Kes of being sincere and sympathetic. And then Neelix misinterprets that as like, oh, he's creeping on you. And you know, and Kes is like, no, he's just being nice. And I loved, I had forgotten the jealousy and kind of where and how that started with Neelix. I know it played out for quite a few episodes. So it was nice to revisit that and kind of see, I can see how he would have gotten in his panic situation, have gotten jealous. And I loved how he called me one big hormone. I thought that was funny.
He called you another name.
Well,
a reptilian vulture. That reptilian vulture and one big hormone. Yeah, hormone. I just love that. That's, maybe we should make a t-shirt with that. We can just wear that. One big hormone. One
big hormone.
Oh my God. I mean, just really some awesome lines.
He's not wrong. The way that Tom Paris was written in those first few episodes, he's not wrong. Like,
right.
I think that, you know, it's always tricky. You're trying to find the right kind of cocktail of writing and performance and how heavy you go. You know, I go as an actor or whatever. It's why I really enjoy directing now, because I get to help modulate actors and kind of go, hey, let's try one a little softer, just throw it away or whatever. And I feel like some of those early episodes with Tom Paris, he was definitely established as a one big hormone and, you know, chip on his shoulder and all those things.
It is surprising how jealous he gets, though, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that is one emotion or one feeling that is, it'd be great if we could somehow work that out of the genetic code where nobody could be jealous at all, but jealousy sucks. It really does. And it's kind of good that they included a character that had to experience this, which just full blown out of nowhere. And possibly because of, you know, being realizing that his life could be in this clamshell for the rest of eternity. I mean, that's, thinking about that and being in his position was definitely, for me, you go like, oh my God, I mean, could I live like that? You know, being in that position. And you could easily see how issues that he had that were kind of under wraps, or he could control it. The jealousy completely went full blown. And it was 100%, you know, the jealous bug was there, and you could see that it wasn't attractive to watch.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder if that line that the doctor says, I'm a doctor, not a decorator. I wonder if he ad-libbed that one. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that was written or if he ad-libbed that.
I don't know. He did it very subtly. It didn't feel like such a big callback to the original series.
Yeah. I can't wait to have Bob on as a guest so we can ask him some of these questions regarding that.
I love the Tuvok on the bridge, you know, talking about to Janeway about he's known her for four or five years now. And I like that reminder that they've got a special history, and Tuvok's going to be somebody who knows her a little better than everybody else. And, I love the disco ball over Neelix's bed and the curtains. I thought that was hilarious. And I thought that whole scene went from sort of the comic version between the doctor and Neelix to really kind of tragic, and it was a beautiful arc in that scene as he started panicking, you know, Neelix starts panicking, and the doctor's like, you know, it starts with comic banter and back and forth, and then ends up with him really getting panicked, and and then the doctor feeling concerned, and also the doctor feeling like he's failed in some way, you know, that that's always going to be a hard one for the doctor to accept, that he's not perfect.
Yeah.
When it's one of the first times where you see his solution is not going to fix this.
Yeah. I did like the scene when we're on the bridge and we start chasing after the aliens who have now entered into an asteroid, and we come into that cavern, and they've thrown that trick out where there's a reflection of, you know, 100 different Voyagers and 100 different, we don't know where their ship is. Chakotay comes up with a brilliant idea of lowering the phaser output so that it's just more of a beam of light, you know, so it's not, and so that we can find out which one is the real alien ship. Yeah. So, you know, so the elements of this episode all really work well together. I felt that this was a great episode, obviously character development wise for Neelix, for the Doctor, for Cass, but then, and also, you know, the scenes from the bridge. I mean, some of the things that we had to see and do and in order to forward this story were, you know, well written. I felt I thought about
when that mirror scene as the ship is going through into the asteroid and seeing all the other ships or reflections or images of other ships. I thought about how when we're on the bridge, this was an early episode still, and there is a description in the script of what we see, but we don't see anything. You know, when we're on the bridge looking at a green view screen, or they would put up on a flag some tape that we would stare at, and we would try to imagine what we were seeing, but we didn't really see it until the episode was done and all the visual effects were done. So looking at that, I was thinking and trying to imagine, like, what did I think I was looking at? You know, like when we shot the scene, I wonder if what I imagined we were looking at is actually what we ended up with. Because a lot of times I know I would film something and think, you know, imagine something there. And then when I saw it later, I was like, whoa, that's what I was looking at. Like if I had known that, I would have maybe reacted bigger or less, or, you know.
So do you think it would have behooved the producers to actually have storyboarded or something to show us, like, hey, this is kind of what we're going to be doing, you know,
that would have been helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they really relied on our own imagination and whatnot to stare at nothing, to create this in our own heads.
Yeah.
And of course, what you're thinking is going to be completely different probably than what I'm thinking, right? Everyone's going to have their own image of whatever it is. Let's see. Oh, when we were in engineering, we finally see Seska in her proper uniform color, the gold color, as opposed to the green.
She had one line, I think, in the whole
episode. She had one line. Yep.
In the whole episode.
We have the Janeway dilemma after we catch the two alien Vidian.
Yeah, I mean, this goes to the core and the theme of the episode right here in this scene. But I really struggle with why she feels like morally she can't steal them back, even if he's, you know, to me personally, I feel like to take Neelix's lungs back from the thief is morally, that is justice, because they don't belong to the thieves. But I know that they did say, well, we've adapted the lungs, that we've changed their, you know, biological structure now. Neelix couldn't use them anyway, even if we could give them back to you. You know, they're of no use to Neelix, and if you took them, he would die. So she's kind of in a pickle. It's like she could take them back, but it's not going to fix Neelix's problem, and it's only going to kill this guy. But that is the dilemma of like...
commit murder to save a life, right? Is what she said. But I thought it was a bit of a cop-out, because if they're that advanced, they could have readapted those lungs back to Neelix's body, dead gummit. I just felt like, you know, that was like, all right.
But I felt the two Vidians, Darth, I think, is the first guy that speaks, and he sounded like an old monster movie Lon Chaney to me with that accent, Darth's accent.
He was talking like this, sort of thing.
When his British accent talking like this, it was very funny. It sounded like Lon Chaney to me. I thought, oh, we had Lon Chaney in the episode.
Motura, you do not need to explain yourself. So it was very theatrical.
Motura, I thought, was an okay guy. He was I felt bad for him. His lungs were going, he needed somebody to help keep him alive.
And yeah, I mean, Dareth, he was ready to leave. When Jamin was saying, I'm letting you go, he was like, we will leave immediately. But Matura was nice. He said, let me take a look at Neelix and let's see what we can do. And Kes volunteers to give her lung, which is very kind of her to do that. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, expected that. But I have a note that I really like Jennifer Lean's portrayal of a diminished lung capacity person speaking at the very end.
That was good. The very little air and very little strength to even speak.
Yeah.
I also thought in that scene, it came off tonally like the doctor is falling in love with Kes.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't even know that he's falling in love, but he's like, she's been sympathetic and empathetic to him in the earlier scene. And after that surgery, there was something kind of romantic. It was like, everybody loves Kes. It's like Neelix loves Kes. Tom Paris obviously is flirting with her because Neelix jealous. And the doctor loves her. Like Kes was, everybody loved Kes in the episode.
But you didn't play it that way though, right?
I tried not to. I wanted to play it very sincerely, just, you know, really, sincere. And it's just concern.
Yeah, which is the right way to play it, because you really, you know, the lesson there is that, you know, jealousy, it serves nobody, right? I mean, honestly, because you were completely innocent in your dealings with Kes. You were coming from that one scene in the prior episode with the briefing room where you take your chair, you get up out of your chair, you give your chair to Kes, right? And Neelix has that initial like, wait, what's happening? And now to this episode, everything you say to Kes is purely just being a good guy, just hate, and there was no ulterior motive at all, but he thought that you were moving in immediately. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, it was a nice, relatively happy ending, I thought, you know. Mm-hmm. Neelix didn't die.
Yeah.
I think all in all, pretty good. In terms of the themes of the episode, you know, I was thinking like this episode was dealing with the question of like, when is doing the wrong thing right? You know, two wrongs don't make a right was Janeway's sort of, you know, that you stole Neelix's lungs, but it's not right for us to steal Neelix the lungs back. Yeah, that was my takeaway. It was kind of like, you know, when is the situation so desperate that doing the wrong thing may be justified?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's the predicament, I think, for everybody in that episode.
Definitely. I mean, it's a perfect example of being able to take the higher road. You know what I'm saying? And to take the higher road is difficult because you're naturally going to want Janeway to say, you took Neelix's lung? Well, guess what? We're going to rip it right back out of your chest cavity. Thank you. And that sort of, you know, vindictive mindset really, this is the reason why conflicts continue. This is the reason why the Arabs and the Israelis have been fighting for 5,000 years, is because nobody's going to take the higher road and say, hey, all right, you just killed so-and-so, you committed the murder, now we're going to stop it. We're not going to go any further, you know? So it is a lesson in two wrongs do not make a right.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. I like that. Right. And also there's the lesson in jealousy. Jealousy serves no one.
Yeah, agreed.
Say. Yeah.
A lot of good lessons in there. All right. Well, I think that does it for our recap this week. Thanks everybody for joining us for our podcast, and a special thanks to all our Patreon supporters. I'm having a blast looking and revisiting these old episodes and remembering all kinds of fun that we had. And I can't wait to see you guys next week. Next week we are going to revisit the episode called "The Cloud." Until then, any final words, Garrett?
No, everyone, stay safe and stay healthy out there. And thank you so much for listening in.